Hi, Johnny DC at the top of the episode to let you know that today, November 29th, is Giving Tuesday, where people around the world are encouraged to remember that the holiday season is about giving, especially to those in need. Every year, this podcast holds a fundraiser with our listeners to donate to one charity, and this year, we're donating to Stand Up to Cancer in remembrance of Kevin Conroy, William Hurt, George Perez, and all the other greats we unfortunately lost to cancer in 2022. To donate, visit our Instagram or Facebook page, which are linked in our show notes for this episode. For every $5 you donate, you will be entered into a drawing we will hold on Christmas Day, where one lucky donor will win our Infinity Crisis DC vs. Marvel deck building card game. Again, visit our Instagram or Facebook and donate to Stand Up to Cancer this Giving Tuesday or any day before Christmas. Thank you so much, and on with the show. Hi, welcome to the Dynamic Duel Podcast, a weekly show where we review superhero films and debate the superiority between Marvel and DC by comparing their characters in stat-based battle simulations. I'm Johnny DC.
And I'm his twin brother, Marvelous Joe.
And in this episode, we are doing a review of the Disney Plus holiday special, The Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special.
Yeah, I really liked it. I had a lot of fun with it. I watched it at the same time I was like decorating my house and putting up the Christmas tree. So it really got me in the holiday spirit.
Yeah, of course, this is Disney Plus's second holiday special after Werewolf by Night,
which was a Halloween special.
Right. Yeah, both of those specials were pretty short. And we'll get into all of our thoughts on the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special later on in this episode. Before that, we're going to break down the comic book movie news from the past week, of which there is just one major news item. Jan Demange is going to direct Blade for Marvel Studios.
As always, we list our segment times in our episode description, so feel free to check out the show notes if you want to skip ahead to a particular topic. Don't forget, guys, to donate to our annual fundraiser, which this year we're giving to Stand Up to Cancer in remembrance of all the comic book and film industry greats we lost this year to cancer. Visit our Instagram page or Facebook page to make that donation. Again, for every $5 that you donate, you'll get entered into a drawing that we'll have on Christmas Day, where one lucky donor will win our Infinity Crisis deck building card game. If you're interested in supporting our show, but you're not able to join our Patreon or donate to our fundraiser, then stop by our website, dynamicduel.com, and subscribe to our weekly newsletter, where we keep you informed on all things going on with the show, and you get free access to the visual data of the results from our latest duel episode when you sign up. Show your friends mathematically why and how one character would beat another. To download that PDF, again, subscribe to our weekly newsletter at dynamicduel.com. But with that out of the way,
quick to the no prize.
A no prize is an award Marvel used to give out up until the 90s to fans. Our version, the Dynamic Duel No Prize, is a digital award we post on Instagram for the person that we feel gave the best answer to our question of the week.
Last week, we asked, what's your favorite Marvel or DC superhero team and why? We got quite a number of answers. Let's go over our honorable mentions before revealing this week's no prize winner.
Our first honorable mention goes to Dustin Balcom, who said,
hey, Dynamic Duel, Dustin Balcom here, and sticking true to my description in the Patreon, I am going Double Agent, and I'm going to go with Heroes for Hire. I love Iron Fist, I love Luke Cage, and I love their interaction together, and I love the revolving door of Heroes for Hire, of like Black Cat, Elektra, Ghost Rider, Human Torch, Spider-Man, Misty Knight, Colleen Wing, of course, because they're Daughter of the Dragon, flipping awesome. So, just Heroes for Hire. They're a really cool team.
Damn it, Dustin! What have I told you? DC! You're on Team DC!
No, this was a great out-of-the-blue answer, pun intended. I think Heroes for Hire is a great team. Definitely overlooked when it comes to on-screen adaptations, but I remember being really into the comics when Ant-Man and White Tiger and Black Knight were on the team, along with Misty Knight and Colleen Wing and the original Human Torch. I thought those were really fun books. I love Iron Fist, love Luke Cage. I thought this was a great answer.
Yeah, I guess they're cool. At least Iron Fist and Luke Cage are, to me personally. I do hope that if they ever bring back Luke Cage and Iron Fist to the MCU, it'll be in a Heroes for Hire television series.
On Disney Plus, that would be awesome. I'd watch the hell out of that.
Our next honorable mention goes to Miggy Mathengian, who said,
"Hey, what's up, guys? This is Miggy, and my favorite superhero team are the Titans because of who they are individually and collectively. The League takes on big bads, the JSA teaches legacy, but the Titans are a support group. You see this in the 80s when they helped Starfire, Cyborg, and Raven deal with getting superpowers and family issues. You see this in the early 2000s when Tim, Bart, Connor, and Cassie help each other come to grips with their identities. And you see this in Rebirth when Dick, Donna, and Roy help Wally get his life back."
Yeah, support group is a fantastic way to describe the Titans. You know, back when they were the Teen Titans and they were all kind of going through their own personal issues as teenagers growing up, you know, it was really relatable. There's a reason why Teen Titans competed against the X-Men for comic book sales during the 80s. It was a really popular team and it was really well written.
I wouldn't describe it so much as a support group because I feel like any team worth its salt is also a support group, whether it's family like the Fantastic Four or a school like the X-Men or something like that.
No, that's a family and that's a school. This is a support group.
To me, Titans is more like fucking Breakfast Club or something. They're like teens who bond over the angst. That's not what a support group does.
So like members from different like cliques coming together to like form a union?
Yeah, exactly. Breakfast Club.
I don't even know what you call that. What is that?
A breakfast club.
All right. Good answer, Miggy. Our final honorable mention goes to Gilly Macho, who said,
"Hey, fellas. Gilly Macho here. Marvelous Joe, thank you for those web shooters. I'm going to wrap this up real quickly. Alpha Twin here, most likely, you know, my brother would choose the Justice League. But you know what? I'm going to choose the Phoenix Five. The look, the costumes, these group was just stupid powerful, and the comic X-Men versus Avengers is awesome, but that's my pick. I choose them."
This is also a left field answer, quite in contrast to Gilly's brother Scotty, who called in with the answer of Justice League. Phoenix Five was a short-lived team during the Avengers versus X-Men event where Cyclops, Emma Frost, Colossus, Magic, and Namor the Submariner all got the powers of the Phoenix. And they were so powerful, they'd beat the shit out of any other super team, including Justice League.
Would they?
I gotta say. Yes, they would.
Would they, though?
This is the fucking Phoenix. Nothing compares with that. But they had great costumes, really like badass attitudes. And yeah, it was an interesting team and a great story.
They did look really cool. I really liked, all of their looks, from Colossus to Namor to Cyclops. I didn't think Emma Frost's outfit could get even better, but it totally did.
Yeah, she looks great. So great answer, Gilly. Great job on being the better twin, given that you're the Marvel fan.
No. It's easy to confuse the two. Scotty is the cooler twin.
Before we give this week's No Prize winner, we want to give shout-outs to all the people that called in and left their answer on our website, including Calvin John Della Merced, who gave the answer of Harley Quinn's crew from the Harley Quinn television series. Scotty Macho, who gave the answer of Justice League. Mitchell Smoothie and Landon Parker, who both answered Midnight Suns. Noah Terry, who answered Dark Knights. And, unfortunately, Lizzie Dyer Arney, who gave the incredibly well-worded response of why Justice League International was her favorite.
Yeah, I really, really wanted to extend our honorable mentions to four slots. Joseph would not let me, so Lizzie, blame him. He's an asshole.
Sorry. My bad.
The winner of this week's No Prize, though, is Eric Mizell, who said,
"My favorite superhero team is the Doom Patrol. They've been around since 1963 and are the most entertaining superhero team by far. They've got an outstanding TV show on HBO and provided the blueprint for lesser copycat teams like the X-Men. They've also been addressing LGBTQ issues decades before the rest of the world caught up. If you've slept on them so far, grab a taco, a bar of chocolate, and a brick, because you're going to need them on Danny Street."
Doom Patrol gets the win here. It is one of the most interesting and influential and transcendent teams, I would say, in comics.
Yeah, they've had a lot of out there stories, especially when written by unique scribes like Grant Morrison, that have gone places that no other superhero team has ever gone. And I think that's evident, even if you haven't read the comics, if you've only watched their television show. There's a new season that is starting, I think, in about a week or so on December 5th. So if you haven't started watching Doom Patrol yet, now is the greatest time to get caught up before that new season starts. It is definitely DC's best ongoing series currently, so I highly recommend it. I gotta say, though, anyone who thinks that X-Men is the lesser team is obviously smoking something. One of the drugs. The only thing Eric is high on is high on life, because Doom Patrol is so damn good. Like, anyone who reads it, their mind is elevated, you know? And it's better than a high. When you read X-Men, you just get dumber. If by dumber you mean cooler, then yeah. Wait a second. I don't know what I'm saying. Damn it. But great answer, Eric. Congrats on winning this week's No Prize. If you, the listener, want a shot at winning your own No Prize, stay tuned to later on this episode when we'll be asking another question of the week. And now that that's done, on to the news. All right, we learned this past week that Marvel Studios has found a new director for their upcoming Blade movie that will star Mahershala Ali. The movie was originally supposed to go into production like this month, but it got delayed once they lost the director due to creative differences. So the movie got pushed back to September 6, 2024, meaning Marvel had time to look for the director and writer package that they wanted for this project. They found that person in Jan Demange, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but he was most prominently a director for several episodes of Lovecraft Country, which was a critically acclaimed show. Yeah, that show is amazing. I'm really sad that wasn't picked up for a second season, but I'm actually really impressed by this choice because of how good that show was. Yeah, it seems like Marvel is really adept at picking up on up-and-coming talent that will deliver a great take, but will also be a little bit pliable and a little bit cheap. Considering how scary that show was, I think we're in for a real treat with him directing Blade. Yeah, the Deadline report on this news said that Marvel is looking to go with a darker tone for this Blade movie, darker than any other film that they've done. I don't know if it'll be like Werewolf by Night dark. I don't think it'll be as dark as Blade 1 or 2. But, you know, when you're dealing with vampires and blood and freaking blades, swords and stuff, yeah, it's going to be a little bit more darker and violent than your standard superhero fare. That being said, you know, when Blade cuts into the vampires, they turn into ash. You don't really see a whole lot of blood, so they could probably get away with quite a bit here. I know that the movie is still a ways out. It won't be around for, you know, another couple of years, but knowing that progress has been made following the unfortunate news that Basim Tariq left the project is really encouraging, and I look forward to getting more news about Blade.
Yeah, considering Mahershala Ali has signed off on this director, I'm assuming, because it seems like he's really involved, that's also a confidence booster, because Mahershala Ali is a talented multi-Academy Award winning actor. So for this director to get his blessing on the project, which we know he wants to be good, is a good sign. But speaking of directors, that brings us to our question of the week. Which director that hasn't made a Marvel or DC film would you like to see direct one? And what film would that be?
Now, I know the patrons are aware that Jonathan and I did a top 10 list as part of our bonus content where we discussed the directors we want to see jump into the Marvel and DC universes. Patrons are discouraged from answering with any of those answers that we gave for that episode.
Yeah, we want to hear your guys' original ideas. Record your answer at dynamicduel.com by clicking on the red microphone button in the bottom right-hand corner, which will prompt you to leave us a voicemail. Your message could be up to 30 seconds long, and don't forget to leave your name in case we include you on the podcast. We'll pick our favorite answer and award that person a Dynamic Duel No Prize that we'll post to Instagram. Be sure to answer before December 3rd. Now let's move on to the main event of this episode, where we review the Disney Plus special presentation, The Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special.
Okay, The Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special was written and directed by James Gunn, and stars Chris Pratt, Pom Klementieff, Dave Bautista, and Kevin Bacon. It's the second special by Marvel Studios to debut on Disney Plus after this past October's Werewolf by Night. Like that special, this was a short but fun entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, perfect for spreading joy in the upcoming holiday season, which is the whole point of holiday specials. Now, if you haven't seen the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special yet, be sure to watch it before listening to this review, because like we do in all our reviews, we will be discussing spoilers from it, and it's just so fun and warm-hearted and gives you some great character building moments and potential plot points for the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 movie coming out this May. You'll want to see it before you listen to us talk about it.
Yeah, it's a really quick watch. I'm not sure how connected it'll be to the larger MCU, but it definitely does set up maybe something that they'll touch on in the next Guardians of the Galaxy movie, Volume 3.
Yeah, specifically regarding Star-Lord's relationship with Gamora and Mantis. Now, I found this holiday special actually really hard to review because I had a lot of fun with it. Like, I thought it was fun and charming and funny, but I knew it wasn't perfect. I also knew that it shouldn't be judged on the same criteria as a full-length film because it's not trying to be one. I don't even think it could be judged on the same criteria as Werewolf by Night, because Werewolf by Night had to introduce new characters and a new setting in a new part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and so it had much more burdens to carry, and it did great. We gave that special 4 stars.
Yeah, Werewolf by Night was more of like an experiment by Marvel, and I think it was a successful experiment, but this special was something very different, and I agree, it's hard to compare the two.
Yeah, Werewolf by Night could have actually been a movie with all the stuff that it had to introduce. This special is just very much what it is, a special. And like all holiday specials, I think it should be mainly critiqued by its one job that it had to do, which is to emphasize the magic of the holiday season. You know, the greatest Christmas television specials like How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Frosty the Snowman, A Charlie Brown Christmas, or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, we love those because they remind us that this is a glorious time of year when the most important things in the world are kindness, selflessness, and togetherness. You should walk away from a Christmas special with this warm, fuzzy feeling and renewed belief in the goodness of mankind.
Yeah, I mean, every year, my family and I, we like to watch all of these Christmas specials, like Rudolph, like the Grinch. We own all of them. I don't think this one will become a part of our annual tradition, but I could see how it could become part of some Marvel fans' annual watch list because of how it touches on the holiday season and spirit.
Yeah, I guess the main question is how well does this special do that? And the answer is, you know, it does about as well as it can, given that the Guardians franchise has always been this sort of crass, inelegant thing that always still manages to surprise us with its heartfelt themes of family and sacrifice. And I would say that I did walk away from this special with that warm, fuzzy feeling, but largely because it was nice to see the Guardians grow as a family, to see Star-Lord and Mantis embrace as brother and sister. I wasn't reminded so much of the magic of the holiday, but I was more reminded how much I've come to care about these characters over the course of the films they've been in. So in that regard, I think it's a great MCU special and merely a good holiday special, if that makes sense. I think what this special lacked in its Christmas message, strangely enough, was a strong antagonist or obstacle to help convey this deeper meaning of the season that all Christmas specials should have. You know, the Grinch had his own warped views, Frosty had the greedy Professor Hinkle, Charlie Brown was beset by the seeming apathy of his friends, and Rudolph couldn't join in any reindeer games. In each of these specials, someone had to go on this grand journey to reach a greater understanding of the spirit of Christmas. Now, Peter Quill, Star-Lord, who's the main character of this, his attitude toward Christmas was never really affected here and had very little to do, actually, with the most cathartic moment of the special, which is at the end when Peter learns that Mantis is his sister. Now, she could have revealed that at any time of the year, and it would still have been just as meaningful. I actually think the people who learned the most about Christmas in this special were Kevin Bacon and Yondu, but they were really just side players.
I'm actually really surprised that you consider Peter Quill to be the primary character of the special, because I think it was actually Mantis. She was the one who had the desire and the want and the need to go on a journey, you know?
Yes, that is correct. She had the most screen time, but it was really Peter they were trying to save. He was the subject of the special, as it were. And what was his journey? There really wasn't any sort of substantial one.
Yeah, it didn't take much for Peter to get sort of back in the Christmas spirit, I guess. Just some twinkling lights.
Exactly. And I think that is kind of what brings about this sort of unsatisfying element to it, despite it being like a great fun time with the Guardians of the Galaxy. But let's talk about some of the things that did bring some Christmas cheer, because there's still a lot to talk about. One of them being the humor of the special. I thought this was hilarious, probably because it put Mantis and Drax front and center, who are always good for a laugh. I loved how their misguided attempt to bring holiday joy to Quill resulted in a plan to abduct Kevin Bacon. I was laughing throughout the whole thing from start to finish. It was easily the funniest thing Marvel Studios has put out this year. Way more funny than Thor: Love and Thunder, which I think just tried too damn hard to be funny. You know, James Gunn's sense of humor is infinitely better in my mind than Taika Waititi's and Chris Hemsworth's.
Oh, for sure. The humor in this special is, you know, right on par with James Gunn's other work. One of my favorite moments in this whole thing is like when Rocket Raccoon sees Bucky's arm and he's just like so happy. He's forming tears. That was a great callback to the other films.
It's weird humor, but it works so well within the context of this like alien world and like the unique motivations of all these different characters. James Gunn is a pro at injecting humor that feels on point for the characters. Unlike when you see like Thor talking about the God of Dumplings or some stupid shit like that.
Right.
That seems very out of character.
Yeah.
Regarding the special, I also really loved the interactions between all these characters. Usually you see the Guardians' relationships develop over these moments of intense crisis, having, you know, to save the galaxy. But it's seeing them in these downtime moments that I find truly fascinating, like even seeing what gifts they would give each other, because presents say so much about the giver and the receiver. I think it's just truly wonderful when superheroes exchange gifts, which you see them do occasionally in the comics.
Yeah, I remember having this one Superman comic where Superman goes around giving the Justice League members different gifts, and like he gave Batman like a vintage antique magnifying glass. He gave the Flash some tube socks. That was pretty funny. And Martian Manhunter got like a box of cookies. That whole issue was very sweet, I thought, as was this special.
Another thing I loved about the special was, of course, the music. Freaking love the music. As everyone knows, James Gunn is unusually gifted at curating soundtracks for his films.
Right.
Including The Awesome Mix Volume 1 and 2. And this holiday special was no exception. You had the Wombats, Fountains of Wayne, fucking Smashing Pumpkins. Like, holy shit. Yeah. I didn't think Gunn would be able to assemble such a good set list outside of the music of the 70s and 80s, but here we are.
The song that he wrote for the opening credits also was freaking spectacular.
Yeah, that was done by a band called the Old 97s, which is a band I've never heard of, but they produced two songs for this special, including the other one with Kevin Bacon on lead vocals called Here It Is Christmas Time, which is cool as hell. The first song was called I Don't Know What Christmas Is, But Christmas Time Is Here. It's absolutely one of my new all-time favorite Christmas songs. It's a banger.
I own both of the Guardians of the Galaxy Awesome Mixes, and damn it, I'm going to have to buy another Marvel soundtrack.
Well, this one was never compiled into a soundtrack specifically, but it is available as a playlist on both Spotify and Apple Music.
Ah, okay. Well, I'm going to be playing that during the holidays for sure.
We're going to go Christmas caroling. Ready, Jonathan?
I don't know what Christmas is, but Christmas time is here.
And the people are going to be like, get off my porch. I don't know that Christmas song.
Then I'll be like, give me some figgy pudding. I won't go until I get some. And then they'll just call the cops.
Yep.
I do have to make a confession that, as I mentioned, I watched this with my family. They liked this so much, we started watching all of the Baby Groot animated shorts, and they wanted to watch the Guardians of the Galaxy movies because they've never seen them before. And I really think we might have to based off of this special.
I think they would enjoy them for sure. Yeah, there's a lot of great characters in there that I think little kids like Rocket and Groot.
Right.
People exactly. Like that. Yeah.
I hear from a lot of people that Guardians of the Galaxy is like their favorite Marvel film. It's definitely one of my favorites. And I think that this holiday special was a good reminder of why these characters that no one had ever heard of until James Gunn made the first movie, why they're so beloved.
Like people who didn't read the comics, you mean?
Well, yeah, most people.
Yeah. Yeah, the characters are super endearing. Let's talk about them more in our character breakdown. Starting off with Mantis, who is played by Pom Klementieff. Now, Pom is such a unique, delightful presence. As the character of Mantis, I can totally see why James Gunn wrote her as the lead character here. Her childlike naivete and her innate kindness as a character makes her absolutely ideal as the heart and soul of a Christmas special.
Yeah, she's great as a character. I really enjoyed her in Volume 2. I think one of the reasons actually my daughters liked this special was specifically because of her. And because I told them that she was also technically a DC character named Willow. So that's maybe right. They thought it was okay.
Yeah, for those who may not know, the character of Mantis has actually jumped in between the Marvel and DC universes. When she goes to DC, she's known as Willow. Little bit of trivia there, which maybe made it okay that this special mentioned Batman. I don't know. Like, Marvel keeps doing that. Like, in this special, they mentioned Batman, and in the Eternals movie, they mentioned Superman. I'm not comfortable with it, I got to admit.
Well, in League of Super Friends, they mention Iron Man. In Lego Batman, they mention Iron Man.
That's right. Okay. At least it's going both ways here. All right. Regarding Mantis's secret that she is, in fact, Quill's sister, I kind of wish they had saved that until the end, like maybe just referenced it in the beginning and then made it more of a revealing surprise when she admitted it to Quill at the end. I think it would have been better for the audience.
That is very true. That's absolutely right. I think learning that along with Quill would have been amazing. You kind of would have experienced the same emotions that he did in that moment. I was actually really surprised when she just dropped that at the beginning. I was like, wait, what?
It was nice, though, that it was her awareness that Christmas is a time for families and those closest to us that really drove this entire story. And all the effort she put in to make the holiday special for her brother Peter was just so heartwarming and was the best, most on-point aspect of this holiday special.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when Peter is saying that the secret that you had is actually the best gift I have ever received in my life, you understand where he's coming from because you know that he didn't have any other siblings growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to Drax the Destroyer, who is played by Dave Bautista. Dave Bautista is so damn hilarious. His endless quirkiness and inability to grasp any sort of abstract concept never gets old. Even when you think it will grow stale, like all of a sudden he's beating the shit out of a GoBot and I'm back on board. He's a brilliant character and there's never really much to say about him arc-wise because he never really changes. But I have to say I'm always glad when he's on screen. So I think that he played a big part in imparting that Christmas cheer on behalf of the special.
Yeah, Dave Bautista just makes it seem so effortless, too. Like, I hope that's not like an insult in any way, because Drax is pretty dumb, but his delivery is so great.
Oh, yeah, he makes me laugh all the time.
And that's like the only role he really does that in, because like all of the other movies that Dave Bautista has done seem very like dramatic or like menacing. I'm going to really miss him in this role when he decides to move on, which may be, you know, this third Guardians of the Galaxy film, considering James Gunn is no longer working for Marvel.
Right. Yeah, I think Dave Bautista has said as much that Volume 3 will be his last turn as the character, which is a shame. But at least we have all these movies to revisit. You know, we'll always have Why is Gamora? Let's go ahead and move on to Star-Lord, aka Peter Quill, who is played by Chris Pratt. Now, I thought Chris Pratt was going to have a larger role in the special, considering that the journey of rediscovering that Christmas magic is really his to go on. But it wasn't much of a journey, which I described earlier as being one of the issues that prevents this from being a truly great holiday special. But I will say that Chris Pratt did an excellent job acting amazed and grateful for everything his teammates did for him. He's always brought this sort of emotional vulnerability to his role as Star-Lord that makes it feel very relatable and makes for a good connection with the audience.
Yeah, he's a terrific actor. And apparently, like, no matter how small his role is, he still manages to shine.
Yeah, I was grateful for what we got of him, for how little we got of him. I'm really interested in seeing how and why Gamora left the team. Hopefully they explain that in Guardians of the Galaxy 3. I'm guessing it's going to be because that version of Gamora just doesn't really know these people the way the Gamora did that was killed by Thanos, and the team just didn't jive. But I sense that he has another real emotional journey to go on, just like he did in the previous two Guardians of the Galaxy films. And I can't wait to see Star-Lord again when the movie comes out in May.
Regarding his arc about regaining his Christmas spirit, I do feel like a lot of that was told in the animated segments. He kind of revealed to Mantis that he never really lost his Christmas spirit because the story that she heard from Kraglin made it seem like Christmas was ruined for him ever since, you know, he was a child. But that didn't turn out to be the case.
Right.
He learned the value of Christmas by sort of teaching it to Yondu in a way and having this father figure reciprocate that. It's not so much that Peter Quill has lost his Christmas spirit, then he's just depressed that he lost his girl. And this holiday special really wasn't the story to fix that problem.
No, but, you know, at least he felt better knowing that he now had a family member.
What did you think of those animated segments?
The animation was pretty ass, but they were fine. I thought, you know, they didn't last long.
I actually watched this right after watching The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. So I thought it was almost trying to kind of mimic that in a way. That was my impression.
Really? I could see that because the eyes of the Whoville citizens kind of match the eyes of the characters in these animated segments.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. Good job noticing that. Let's go ahead and move on to the legendary Kevin Bacon, who's played by the one and only legendary Kevin Bacon. It was awesome to see an actor play themselves in the MCU. Guess this means that they won't be recasting him as Sebastian Shaw if and when that character ever shows up alongside the X-Men. But regardless, I think the amount of fun that Kevin Bacon seemed to have in this special was readily apparent. And that was fun to see.
I loved it when Mantis and Drax realized that he was an actor. that was, he was like, oh yeah, that's another character that I played. That's not me, but he's an actor. It was just so funny and so meta about how all the aliens in this movie kind of think that actors are like pieces of shit.
Yeah, it was a little self-deprecating, but it's ironic in the fact that Mantis and Drax themselves are actors in reality. I was trying to think about why they hated actors. The way I rationalized it in my mind was that it's probably a uniquely Earthling thing to get entertainment out of people acting like other people. Whereas like out there in space, you have actual shapeshifters like Skrulls who can act like other people and transform into them. And it's probably seen as more of like a danger, that sort of like chameleon deceptive quality.
Right, right. Acting is deception.
Yes. So I could kind of see where they're coming from in their hatred of actors. But the realization, like when Mantis was about to puke and Drax was like, we ruined Christmas worse than Yondu. It was so hilarious. I love the part where Mantis tells him to be Kevin Bacon, but like if you didn't suck. It was so good.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that scene, when Kevin Bacon was like, I just feel really great about all of this. And Drax was like, we hate you. So good. But, you know, Kevin Bacon was a good sport about everything.
Totally.
It was interesting that he had one of the most recognizable arcs here in that we see him learn that no matter who you are, or what you've done, everyone could use a Christmas pick-me-up if you can spare the time and effort. And I thought that was really cool.
Again, great song that he sang with the band. Totally got me in the holiday spirit as well.
Yeah, he's a pretty damn good singer. Let's go ahead and move on to Craiglin Abfanteri. I think that's my first time ever saying his last name, but he's played by Sean Gunn. I think Sean Gunn's performance in these films has always been kind of scene stealing, but not for any other reason than Craiglin is just an endearing character. You know, he's not the smartest or the handsomest or the most skilled, but he is well-meaning. He's honest, and his simple dopiness and pureness, I think, makes him stand out. Now, Craiglin was the one who inadvertently caused Kevin Bacon to realize that he was needed. And I think Sean Gunn was just great in this special. And I hope we see more of him in Guardians Volume 3. Hopefully, he learns how to master that Yaka arrow that used to be Yondu's.
Yeah, that mohawk looks painful now.
Yeah, it's cool, though. Let's move on to Nebula, who is played by Karen Gillan. Now, she had a very small role in this, but it's nice to see she's still growing from the very damaged being she was from the first movie into this, you know, still pretty rough, but somewhat softer person.
She's always just so angry. She even dances angrily.
Yeah. That was hilarious. Those like head jerks that she does.
Yeah.
I'm like horrified that her arc will ultimately result in like her sacrificing herself on behalf of her sister, because that just makes sense. That's where it would go. But hopefully I'm wrong when Volume 3 comes out. Let's move on to Groot, who is voiced by Vin Diesel. This was also a very small role, but Groot played the part of the child who is still very enamored by all things Christmas. And I thought it was really fun to see him get excited about everything.
It's pretty swole for a child.
Yeah, you would think that by now Groot would look more like he did in the first Guardians film. But Craiglin said that he was still a kid here, so it's almost like he's just aging in real time. I'm guessing that like if this special takes place around 2025 or so, and the first Guardians movie was around 2014, he's probably around like 10 or 11 years old only. Although he did get blipped, so he's probably actually younger than that even.
I still can't believe Vin Diesel is getting paid to voice that line over and over again. Good gosh.
Yeah, easiest paycheck ever for sure. But I thought the visual effects were actually really well done. Let's go to move on to Rocket, who is voiced by Bradley Cooper. Again, small role, but it seems he's really interacting a lot with Cosmo the space dog now that the Guardians own Nowhere and are using it as their new base of operations. We mentioned it before. I thought it was really great to see Rocket get Bucky's arm after he made that promise all those years ago in Wakanda.
You just got to wonder like how Bucky lost his arm and what he's doing without his arm right now.
Yeah, it's weird because Nebula gave him the vibranium arm, you know, like the black and gold one that Black Panther gave to him in Infinity War. But when you look at the concept promotional art that they released for the Thunderbolts movie, which is where the Winter Soldier is going to appear next, he still has that same black and gold arm. So either he has spares or somehow Bucky's going to get the arm back or something. I don't know.
I doubt they're going to explain it.
They probably won't.
It's probably just a gag.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and move on to the last member on our character list, Cosmo the space dog, who is voiced by Maria Bakalova. Now, I never saw the Borat sequel, even though I loved the first Borat film, so I'm not too familiar with this actress, but I've heard that she was incredible in that movie. And I'll be damned if I don't already love her as Cosmo the space dog, despite the fact they gender bent the role.
I don't know if they gender bent the role. I know like voice actresses will do the voice of young boys and maybe they were just trying to make Cosmo sound younger. No one specifically referred to Cosmo as female.
Well, Cosmo also wasn't a puppy in this. So if they're trying to go for the young male voice here, I don't think they succeeded. I think they gender bent the dog from a male to a female, which is absolutely fine. I actually really like this because I think Bakalova's performance is already worth the change. It was just adorably funny. We're going to learn more about Cosmo the space dog in our next episode for our charity duel.
Spoiler!
But I think that does it for all the characters, so let's go ahead and get into our story highlights. In a flashback to Star-Lord's childhood, he and Kraglin attempt to explain the Earth holiday of Christmas to Yondu. Yondu hates and rejects the idea, forever ruining the holiday. After hearing about this story, Mantis feels bad for Star-Lord. I really like how they turned Yondu into like the Grinch or Scrooge character of this story. He just like irrationally almost hates Christmas with all his soul because he doesn't even really know anything about it. But then all of a sudden you see him like slamming the Christmas tree down and kicking it away. It's almost comical. Star-Lord listens to a song written about Christmas by a band on Nowhere, which now serves as the Guardians' new base after they purchase it from the Collector. Which is interesting because I thought the Collector was killed by Thanos. Although that was never explicitly stated, we know that Thanos did fuck up the Collector's collection when he got the Reality Stone from him.
Yeah, that's true. I loved it when Quill was like, you guys just got these instruments?
Yeah, at the end of the song.
Yeah.
I like how the song painted Santa as like a, this master burglar who will hurl sugar plums at your head if you're good. But if you're naughty, he'll shoot missiles at your toes and roast your chestnuts with his flamethrower. And Quill was like, he doesn't have a flamethrower. It was so good. It was like this weird alien interpretation of the holiday via the telephone game.
Right.
In the special, Mantis tells Drax that she feels compelled to do something special for Star-Lord, given her revelation that she is his half-sister, and because of his sadness over Gamora's departure from the team. Drax comes up with the idea that they should give him Kevin Bacon as a Christmas present. So Mantis and Drax leave Nowhere and travel to Hollywood, California. Not knowing where to find Kevin Bacon, they stop at Grauman's Chinese Theater, where people confuse them for cosplayers, and they make some money taking photos. I like how Mantis saw Captain America and she's like, Steve! And then like he got freaked out and ran away and they were so confused. Why? That was pretty good. So continuing their search, Mantis and Drax wander into a bar where they dance with the locals and take an obscene amount of shots. Lying drunk on the curbside, they're given a star map which shows the homes of Hollywood stars. If there was any scene that was unnecessary within the special, it was this bar scene.
Totally.
Mainly because it didn't advance the story. And really, like, the best place, I believe, in Hollywood to get those star maps is the Chinese Theater that they were at.
Well, it's on Hollywood Boulevard, for sure.
Right, exactly. So you think they would have found them while they were taking pictures with cosplayers, as opposed to just this random lady who's handing them out at a random bar.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I don't know if that bar is on Hollywood Boulevard, or that's probably where it is, honestly, because they were right next to a kiosk with the maps. But yeah, they even used like the scene of them just kind of drunk on the street as part of like the promotional poster for this holiday special. And I don't get what was so special about it.
Right, because like the drunkenness didn't factor into the plot at all. Like it would have been funny if like they were still drunk when they were trying to get Kevin Bacon and it like hampered them or something, but they became sober pretty quick, it seems like.
I did like the joke where she was like, oh, I ran out of money, give it to me for free. But I don't think you needed them to be drunk for that to happen.
It was funny when Mantis was like breathing out smoke after she took her shot of tequila or whatever it was. It looked like bourbon or something. I thought that was a pretty weird visual. But then she was like, more. Did you notice that the bartender was Javelin?
Yes.
From Suicide Squad. Did you notice the other Suicide Squad celebrities that were on the star map that they received?
No.
There was Margot Robbie and John Cena on that map.
Really?
Yeah, also Queen Latifah and Zach from Saved by the Bell. I don't know the actor's name. Mantis and Drax break into the home of Kevin Bacon, who freaks out, calls the police, and flees down the street. The police arrive, but Mantis and Drax subdue them, and Mantis uses her tactile telepathy to convince Kevin Bacon to come back to nowhere with them. I thought it was a little bit inconsistent. This is a minor nitpick, but I did question it, how Mantis has to be thrown over the entry gate, but then she could also effortlessly leap up to the second story of Kevin Bacon's home and, you know, leap over fences across yards as they pursue him.
No, I totally thought the same thing. It kind of made me just think that they did that as a joke. I don't know if it was needed.
I did think it was hilarious when she jumped up to the second floor and she was like screeching like some kind of wild animal. It was like so hilariously creepy. I also laughed out loud at the part when Drax flips over the cop car and Mantis is like, Drax, you can't just go around killing people. And he's like, how am I supposed to know the rules if no one tells me? <It's funny. laughs> So after raiding a holiday decor store, Mantis and Drax learn en route to nowhere that Kevin Bacon is actually an actor. Repulsed and disgusted, they convince him to act like an actual hero. Back on Nowhere, Quill is amazed to find that the Guardians and residents have decorated the town in Christmas lights and artificial snow. He's shocked, though, when he learns that they kidnapped Kevin Bacon and wrapped him in a box. After Mantis removes his trance, Quill tells them to take Bacon back to Earth. I thought the scene where Star-Lord walks out into the decorated areas of Nowhere was quite special feeling, definitely assisted by the great song Christmas Time by Smashing Pumpkins.
Great song. Great song.
Amazing song. I'm just going to be listening to this whole soundtrack on repeat until Christmas comes. I really like the moment when Star-Lord is like, you guys didn't have to, when they pull up the present for him and he's slowly walking toward it. And then all of a sudden it moves and his facial expression changes. He's like, what the fuck?
Right.
So Kraglin apologizes to Kevin Bacon, but tells him he was only abducted because Quill idolized him. And he tells him that Quill never got to celebrate Christmas as a child. Having a change of heart, Kevin Bacon stays on Nowhere for a bit to play a Christmas song with the Nowhere band. Everyone gives each other gifts and celebrates the season. The gift giving was pretty interesting. You know, Star-Lord gave a Game Boy to Groot, which makes sense because we know that Groot loves video games.
That was the best gift, in my opinion. Hands down.
Nebula gave Rocket Bucky's arm. Cosmo gives Kraglin a dead space rat, which I thought was hilarious. Mantis gives Drax the inflatable elf decoration that he really liked back on Earth. And Groot gave the Guardians some handmade dioramas, which was really weird in a Guardians of the Galaxy sort of way, but funny.
Especially Kraglin's.
Yeah, because it was a diorama of him holding the diorama of him holding the diorama of him.
Right.
After saying goodbye to Kevin Bacon, Mantis reveals to Star-Lord that Ego was also her father, and he tells her getting her as a sister is the best Christmas present he could have ever asked for. He recounts that Yondu actually celebrated Christmas with him as a child, where Quill gifted him a figurine for his console, and Yondu gave Quill his element guns. Although I don't think they're element guns in the movies, they're just blasters. But in the comics, those are his element guns. I wondered if Peter gave Yondu the figurine because Yondu already liked to put them up on his console, as we learned in the first Guardians movie, or if that was the first figurine that Yondu had ever received, and he kind of kept adding to those figurines as a kind of tradition based on Peter's gift.
I think that was the first one.
Yeah.
Because you didn't see any others when he put it up.
That's true. Yeah. I remember one of the criticisms of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 that you gave was that the team's mourning of Yondu fell flat for you because he always came across as a horrible father. But it was nice to see what their relationship actually looked like, to get a glimpse of that within this special.
I agree. Yeah, I think it kind of adds a little bit more to Volume 2 in that regard.
Yeah, it seemed like they had this kind of like tough love kind of relationship, but they still very much cared for each other. And yeah, it makes Quill's sadness at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 that much more understandable. In an after credit scene, Rocket and Cosmo try to decorate Groot like a Christmas tree, but Groot isn't having it. And Rocket mentions something about how they're going to have another holiday special now, which would be awesome considering that it would take place after Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which is when a lot of us are expecting will be the final appearance of a lot of these characters in the MCU.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they added that line. I was kind of surprised by that. I was like, are they going to? I don't know.
I don't think so, considering James Gunn is working for the enemy now.
Yeah, no, he's working for the good guys.
So that brings us to the end of the review. Overall, I think it was a great special, if not the best holiday special in the traditional sense, but it was still a lot of fun. I always love spending time and watching these characters, and I'm really grateful for Marvel Studios for producing it. I'm giving the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special 3.5 stars. I don't think it held up quite as well as the Werewolf by Night special.
It's hard to rate these specials. I had a hard time rating Werewolf by Night as well, just because they're so short. But considering that the film mostly set out what it was trying to do, I definitely give it high marks, though I agree that it's not as good as Werewolf by Night, probably because it tried to do less.
That's a great way to put it. Like, I feel bad because, you know, 3.5 stars is not a bad score, but for some reason it comes across as a bad score for something that is so joyous and fun, and therefore I feel like I'm being overly critical. And as I was writing this review, on a more personal note, I was like starting to question if my slight dissatisfaction with the special has something to do with my longing for that exact same kind of magic that we felt as children watching things like Rudolph every year and not getting that here because I'm just too old and cynical to experience it anymore. As I was writing this review, I was like, perhaps I've just been going through a crisis of a lack of Christmas spirit on my own. But if that were the case, I just don't think that this was the special to save me. And as I began to despair in like this crisis of holiday joy, I reminded myself that I have a kid on the way. For those who don't know, my wife is currently pregnant and we'll have our first kid in the spring. And by this time next year and the next and the next and the next, I'll be able to watch this holiday special with my own family and hopefully relive the same magic I did when I was a kid.
I gotta say, having kids is the best way to re-experience things like Christmas in a new way, absolutely, because seeing the joy on their face and their sense of wonder just reminds you of the wonder that you had when you were their age, because you see so much of yourself in them.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun to bring it all back, and maybe rewatching this holiday special after the kid is born will make me like it more.
Maybe not this one, but definitely like Rudolph, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. But 3.5 stars, still a good score. We'd like to hear what you thought about the special by writing to us at dynamicduelpodcast@gmail.com or by visiting us on Instagram or Twitter. You could find links to all of our accounts by checking out our show notes or visiting our website, dynamicduel.com.
And don't forget that this episode drops on Giving Tuesday, November 29th. On that Tuesday and for the rest of December up until Christmas, please consider visiting our Facebook and Instagram pages to donate to Stand Up to Cancer, this year's charity fundraiser. Don't forget that for every $5 you donate, you will be entered into a drawing that we will hold on Christmas Day, where one lucky donor will win our Infinity Crisis DC vs. Marvel deck building card game.
Yeah, thank you so much to everyone who participates in that. It's a nice way to give back in the holiday season and a reminder that Christmas is all about giving.
In our next episode, this year's Charity Duel, we will be pitting Cosmo the Space Dog against the Red Lantern Cat, Dexstar.
Yeah, every year for our Charity Duel episodes, we like to pit animal characters against each other. I don't know why, just to be cute or something, but it's a lot of fun. You know, we've done Chip the Squirrel versus Rocky Raccoon, Crypto the Super Dog against Throg, Spider-Ham versus the terrific What's-It. I think last year we did Hitmonkey versus Gleek. It's a whole lot of fun. We've done a number of these duel episodes. Definitely check them out and look forward to the one next week.
But that does it for this episode. We want to give a big thanks to our executive producers, Ken Johnson, John Storoski, Zachary Hepburn, Dustin Balcom, Miggy Mathengian, Brendan Estergaard, Nathaniel Wagner, Levi Yayton, Nick Abanto, Austin Wazalowski, AJ Dunkerley, and Scott Camacho for helping make this podcast possible. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Up, up, and away,
true believers.